each hotel chain, they have like multiple brands, like Hilton has like 30 and Marriott has another 40. So like these loyalty things are kind of accumulating. We see a lot of movement there. For instance, recently Hilton made this move that they included AutoCamp, this glamp site, A-Streams. It's not their brand and they include them in their loyalty program. So there will be a lot of this like accumulation. It doesn't need to be exactly the brand of the hotel. It can be maybe like the airline brand, like Flying Blue, that it's going to cover everything.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. So I recently took my family to this really, really cool, beautiful Airbnb in the Shenandoah Valley. Now, the host had left a list of, you know, reasonable checkout chores, and I was convinced that we had followed the instructions to a T. So you can imagine my total frustration when I got an angry message from the host asking why I didn't take the trash cans to the curb upon checking out. I was confused by her message and then realized that when she said take the trash out, she meant take the trash all the way out. And to be honest, I was like pretty annoyed by the message, right? I had just spent like over $1,000 on a long weekend and I had tried to do the right thing. I took the freaking trash to the trash can from the kitchen to the trash can. And I hate to admit it, but this little encounter with her at the end of the day compelled me to leave a 4-star review, which again, I never do. I think this was the first 4-star review I've ever actually left because, you know, I host this podcast with all you incredible people in short-term rentals and hospitality, and I know how important those 5-star reviews are. But again, her tone, the style, and really, quite frankly, just the request to roll the freaking garbage cans to the curb after spending $1,000 at your place, it was too much, right? Now, this host had clearly not heard about my new friend's Can Monkey, the Uber for trash service, because if she had, she'd have never have to worry about getting a 4-star review again. Well, you know, from me at least. What's that? Oh, you haven't heard of Can Monkey either? Oh my gosh. Well, friends, let me tell you about these new friends of mine who are solving all of the headaches surrounding trash and your STR. Can Monkey ensures that the trash cans at your Airbnbs are moved to the curb and back promptly on collection day so that if you've got a same-day turnover, your new guest arrives to a clean and empty trash bin. And for those unexpected situations like a guest leaving behind excess trash or an unexpected midweek turnover, their on-demand trash removal enables you to book a can runner. Cool name, huh? Right? Cool. Like it's like an Uber driver, but like for trash cans, like can runner. I think that's pretty cool. I'd get a t-shirt that said, like, I'm a can runner. Anyways, they'll send a can runner immediately to help come and remedy the situation. So for just $49 a month per property, Can Monkey will come pick up the trash and return your trash and recycling cans back to your home. No hidden costs. You are never locked into any long-term contract. And whether you've got one property or 100 properties, Can Monkey can have you up and running within a week. To learn more about why hosts love this Uber for Trash solution, head on over to canmonkey.com and submit their form on their homepage to get more information about how Can Monkey can help you. Oh, and if you do, please, please, please be sure to mention that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way, and you may qualify for an exclusive discount off of your first month of using Can Monkey if you do so. So remember, if you go and submit the form, if you talk to the team there, be sure to say that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way. Never let taking out the trash be the reason you get a 4-star review, ever, right? This is simple stuff. You should never get a 4-star review because you've required your guests to pull the cans to the curb. Let Can Monkey do it for you. All right, guys, learn more at canmonkey.com. That's canmonkey.com. In just a moment, you'll meet Peter Faber, an entrepreneur building a portfolio of niche hospitality businesses from marketplaces to industry newsletters. Peter is a product designer by trade and has spent his career working in and around hospitality and technology companies. In this conversation, Peter shares hot takes he has on the relevancy, or lack thereof, of hotel brands over the next decade, how he built a marketplace for company offsites and corporate retreats, why the best hospitality entrepreneurs can run both hotels and vacation rental portfolios, the future of loyalty programs in the travel industry, and so much more. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Peter. All right, Peter, we are live, good sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. I think we first connected on Twitter. You actually have like a massive following on LinkedIn, which I didn't even realize until last night. So I was just Googling you and reading your website, clicking through to some of your projects. And I'm just wildly excited for this conversation because you're a hospitality entrepreneur that's like dabbling with all sorts of different unique things and projects and lots of internet projects, some offline projects as well. So I'm ecstatic that you are taking time to chat with us today. Peter, we were just talking offline and you were giving me some unsolicited advice, quite frankly, of how to up my podcast game. And one of the things that you said, which I loved, you were like, hey, I love when people start a podcast with just like some hot take or something controversial just to, grip the listener. And I'm curious, man, since you called me out there, what hot take do you have these days?
That's a good one. I expected now that you will find some of my tweets or LinkedIn posts that sound controversial and you will catch me on that. But I have couple of ideas. I actually talked about it with a friend of mine yesterday that I really don't believe that in hospitality with hotels, the brand is going to be very important in the next like 5 or 10 years for concepts that are not premium luxury or it's not somehow related to community. So to explain, like it already happened in the airline industry, right? Like you had some low budget airlines that started to like cut all the services and if whatever you want additional for your flight, you have to buy extra, like right, extra luggage, extra drink, yeah, extra meal, extra check-in, and then all like other airlines, like traditional airlines, they realized that well, we cannot really compete with that, and it ended up that they are doing the same, right? And it took them maybe 10 years to catch up. They are doing the same. Yeah. But you still have airlines where like Emirates, where you are going to get amazing experience, but it's like what, 5% of the market. And I believe the same is going to happen in the hotel industry, that it's everything is going to be automated. There will be no like this personal touch. Everything is going to be about efficiency, and it's already somehow happening. And guests don't really care if they're going to stay in Marriott or Accor or Hilton or whatever type of hotel. Where brand is going to be important is for these premium experiences like Aman or you go somewhere. It doesn't need to be expensive. It doesn't need to be luxury experience, but it can be something related to community. And that's where the brand is going to be important. But I just believe that the importance of brands in hotel industry is just going to disappear in the next 5-10 years. And they've been building it for, imagine you have been building the brand for 40 years and now someone is telling you that actually it's not going to be important.
Yeah. I mean, that is certainly a hot take. And I've got a couple follow-up questions for you just to riff on this a little further. So let's just say that that's true, right? And let's pretend that that's true. What does that mean then for things like loyalty? You think like loyalty just won't factor in at all? Like people won't care about being able to earn free nights to stay at a particular hotel because they've got loyalty there? What do you think that means then for like, there's a huge gap, right, between staying at, you know, a Four Seasons or a Motel 6, right? And that's an incredibly like wide range. So are you suggesting then, and Four Seasons I guess might fall into your like luxury category, but there's a lot in the middle, right? And there's even a significant difference from my perspective at staying at like a JW Marriott, which is not a luxury hotel, right, and staying at Motel 6, or I'll just keep hating on Motel 6, right, or even like a Best Western hotel, right? Like the gap there is wildly different. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, are you suggesting that all hotels will just have like they'll all rise up from where they are right now, and that middle will sort of just all feel and look like the same? Because unless that's true, I have a very hard time believing that brand won't matter. People care about loyalty. They love loyalty. And people do like the feeling of being a little bit better than somebody else, right? So even mm-hmm. if I can't afford to stay at like a Four Seasons or a Ritz-Carlton, I might feel better about myself because I can stay at the JW Marriott versus like a Motel 6. So flesh it out a little further. Like what exactly do you mean?
Well, I still believe that this Ritz-Carlton and this type of Four Seasons, this type of brands are going to, these brands are going to be relevant in next 10 or 20 years, and the brand for them is going to be what is really important. I'm talking more about this like middle brands, right? Like you use that example of Motel 6, but there are so many brands somewhere in between Ritz-Carlton and Motel 6. And I'm talking more about these brands that you booked based on, it's already happening, right? Like each hotel chain, they have like multiple brands, like Hilton has like 30 and Marriott has another 40. So like these loyalty things are kind of accumulating. Yeah. We see a lot of movement there. For instance, recently Hilton made this move that they included AutoCamp, this glamp site, A-Streams, it's not their brand, and they include them in their loyalty program. So there will be a lot of this like accumulation. It doesn't need to be exactly the brand of the hotel. It can be maybe like the airline brand, like Flying Blue, that it's going to cover everything. So yes, the clients are going to look on the loyalty as like how I can get a discount. And this is going to be important. But is the loyalty really connected to the brand? I recently booked some hotel here in Amsterdam where I'm based. My family was visiting and I used this brand. I booked the brand. It's called Novotel. It's under Accor. And I was on their website, and when I was making a booking, they asked me if I want 15% discount. I never used that hotel before, and they asked me 15% discount if I become a member. And it was just a few clicks, and I got 15% discount. And they consider me like, oh, now I'm a member and loyal customer. And I don't care. The next time I'm going to book whatever hotel, like it, I don't see this loyalty thing so important. But there are very strong cultural differences, I think, between Europe and the US. Like, for instance, in the US, the collecting the points is way more important than in Europe. Like, clients care way less in Europe about the points, what I find quite interesting. And there will be a lot of automations, you know? Like, it's already happening that hotels that are using modern property management softwares, they don't really need to have a reception, right? So you can just directly go to the room, you can open the door with your phone, and then everything is automated. And then like, what is the brand, right? Like because that brand was created mainly by the experience or you are feeling part of the community. And if you remove any interactions with people, then it's just a place to sleep, maybe you eat something, then it's also for these hotel companies, it's very difficult to create that brand, right? That's why I believe that the brand important is going to vanish in the next years.
Very, very, very interesting. I mean, that's a wonderfully hot take. Maybe one of the things on the loyalty front, just to tease this out a little bit and to use sort of I think you use an analogy that works in Europe, just to kind of bring one that I know that people are familiar with here in the States, right? Maybe loyalty happens at like, the airline alliance level, right? So like in the States, right, you've got like Star Alliance, you've got like Oneworld. These are large alliances of global airlines, quite frankly, right? So maybe what you're saying is true and people still care about loyalty simply because they do care about points and being able to redeem those points for upgrades and or free stays, maybe what will happen is we'll see a shift towards more comprehensive loyalty programs, like the Hilton example that you gave of Hilton, you know, letting you earn honors points if you stay at an auto camp property. Maybe we'll see more of that start to happen and people will have like a Star Alliance loyalty or like a Oneworld loyalty, as opposed to like a United Airlines on the Star Alliance front or American Airlines on like, you know, the Oneworld front.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, that's really interesting, man. Yeah, I don't know if I agree, but I think that what will happen is like I do think that middle will become, I think we'll see more people scale up, right, and others scale down, so that the actual like gap in the quote unquote middle is maybe smaller than it is at this moment in time. But I love this. Like let's keep we could riff on this all day. I do want to talk a little bit more and really for the first time about you and like what you're doing, because you're clearly somebody who thinks about all this stuff. You've got a number of really cool projects going on that all sort of intersect the real estate, like hospitality and tech space. How did you like first get started here? Like what was interesting about this space that compelled you to start building the various projects that you've built within it?
I've always been in tech and like building websites and blogs and affiliate sites, like when I was 20 years ago. Now I'm almost 40, so when I was like 20 something, and I never thought about like going into hospitality. But then during the university, with a friend of mine, we started to organize surf camps for people who want to learn surfing in Portugal, in Spain, in France. It was just a summer gig for us to make a bit of money, and then we used that money for traveling for the rest of the summer. And so we organized it like for 2, 3, 4 weeks in July, and then August we spent just like traveling along the coast and surfing. That was a very good lesson about not just hospitality, about like running a business. It was, even there was no intention to run a business. It was more like a side gig or hobby. It was a lot of work. And then I came back to tech, and my background is I'm a product designer, software designer, and I had the tech startup, and we went to Bay Area, San Francisco, for a couple of months with our startup, staying there in local startup accelerator, not Y Combinator. It was like like C or D, D level type of accelerator. It was an amazing experience, and we didn't have any
Z Combinator.
I don't want to say the name because I don't want to promote them. Like the experience was a bit awkward, but in the accelerator, the experience itself, staying in Bay Area was amazing. Absolutely, changing my perspective about life and business and all that stuff. And our startup kind of failed, but I saw their interesting opportunity that when we moved there, we didn't have, we were looking for some place to stay that is very cheap. And this was like 2012, 2013. We couldn't find any place that was like affordable. It was, Bay Area was already at the time super expensive. And there were a couple of these like hacker houses that you stay in the huge villa with 15 other people. You are, they were on Airbnb, you can book a bed, but we stayed in 3 different ones, and I had bed only once, you know, like once I slept on the mattress, and second time they didn't even give us mattresses. It was like some bags or something, like literally on the floor. So it was quite wild, but the that hospitality experience, but the community experience was amazing. There were like so many interesting different people. You can chat all the time with someone like working in as an intern in some company. Imagine like all these people who didn't want to spend a lot of money, typically single. So it was like a great community experience.
Yeah.
And I just saw like, what about combining this with my surf camps and organize something like a hacker house for tech people who can just go and surf, and not to do it in Bay Area, that is expensive, but to do it somewhere in Spain or Portugal. And I came with this idea that, okay, my startup, web analytics startup I had at the time with which we went to Silicon Valley and to become successful, it didn't really work. And I thought like, okay, what can I do next? And this was the, this was like obvious idea. I should combine these surf camps with something else. And that's how I actually entered hospitality.
Wow. Okay. And was this idea that this was Surf Office? Is that correct?
That's correct. I call it Surf Office. It was like, okay, surf and office. The idea was that I had the job I had to find a job to pay the bills, and after that startup failed, and I was working for one tech company in Czech Republic in Prague, and I asked them if I could work from Spain, from Canary Islands. For people who don't know about like where are the Canary Islands, especially Americans, it's like Hawaii, so it's very far from Europe. It's part of Africa, but they are part of Spain, and the climate is very similar to Hawaii. So there is a spring or summer, nothing else, and great surfing. So that was like the best place in Europe, even technically it's not Europe, where I could be and surf and work remotely. So I moved there and opened this co-living, co-working space, and create a simple landing page and tell people like, yeah, if you want to come, like you can have accommodation, you can have workspace with fast internet and like nice community of like internet people, remote workers, digital nomads. And it worked. It worked quite well. Made a lot of friends. I had a great lifestyle. I surfed every day. I was very, very fit, even not eating healthy, or like I didn't have to care about my body. Like, because if you surf every day, you are good. And I have very good memories about that period.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, and so how does that then evolve into the Surf Office we know today? So for our listeners' sake, Surf Office is this a marketplace that you've created, right, to really help folks find a great place for like a corporate retreat. Like that seems to be like the core niche that you've doubled down on. How do you evolve from this like co-working space, this like tight-knit community where you'd work really hard together online and then close the laptops and hit the beach? How do you evolve from that into what Surf Office is today?
Initially, I thought that the clients of that co-living I started are going to be people who are like entrepreneurs, freelancers, digital nomads. And it turned out that most of our clients were actually employees of the companies, like who could work remotely. And they asked me, like a lot of them, like, hey, I would like to do this actually with my team, like 4, 5, 6 people. And we started to get a lot of inquiries for this. Like it was not on our website that we are specializing on organizing like team of sites. The website was saying that we are a co-working, co-living space in Canary Islands. Then we had another location in Portugal, in Lisbon, and another one in Santa Cruz in California. And that was the pitch on the website. But like I saw these companies contacting us like, hey, we would like to come to your place. And first I thought like, okay, this is random. Let's see how it goes. But then we started to have like these quite famous companies. Like there was Stripe, there was Shopify, there was Automatic, there was Google, you know, like big names, and started to bring more teams. And I thought like, okay, there is something. And they we had then a request that, okay, we don't want to come just like 5, 6 people as a team. We want to come whole department, like 30, 40 people. And I told them, but I don't have enough rooms. I don't have enough beds for you. And I asked them, what about, can I book you like a hotel? Yeah. And they said like, yeah, but that's why I want to go to your place, because we don't want to stay in a hotel. And we want to do it in the way that with someone who understands exactly what we need, and you have a good internet. And I just thought like, okay, how I can do this with other properties? I don't have to run over my own properties. And how I can make sure that these things that worry these customers, the internet connection in the meeting space, I'm going to fix them, or I'm going to curate these properties, these hotels. And that's how it started. I just started to offer other properties, and I realized that it's much better business than running a co-working and co-living space. And I also enjoyed it much more to work with these like tech companies, and it was more exciting like to organize larger and larger groups and work with more different hotels. It was much faster to scale to a lot of different locations, because you don't need to rent the space and set up everything by yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's a brilliant idea. And, you know, I'd imagine, I believe that you started the company like before the pandemic, and I believe like the pandemic, while maybe, you know, initially, was a, you know, a punch in the face, if where we are today, where so many companies, are either fully remote and or offer incredible flexibility, like the demand for in-person gatherings over dedicated periods of time, like a quarterly offsite or a annual offsite, whatever it might be, executive team leadership retreat, all that stuff, right, is now a line item in a company's budget that before the pandemic, it wasn't there, or that line item wasn't as large, because there was this very expensive office that people were paying for, right? So why not just do it at the office? So I imagine like COVID just kind of really coming out of COVID in particular, just like really accelerated the business. Was that true? Did that happen? Did you see sort of like this huge kind of spike in demand post the pandemic?
Yeah, it was crazy. And the great thing that we were ready for it. We already had an established brand after COVID ended. We started to organize. We organized like in 6 months of 2021, because the first half of the year of 2021, there was still not yet traveling, and companies didn't want to organize it. Yeah. But second half of 2021, we were like double of or triple what was the revenue what was before the pandemic. And before the pandemic, we focused on these remote companies, and we had this strong belief that there will be simply more remote companies, that that's the future, that when you start a new company, you want to make it remote and hire from anywhere and have a flexibility as a founder. And we just believe that this is the future. And maybe there are not so many remote companies. There were not so many at the time. It's going to be a large market. So that was the idea behind it, but it was very niche. And then after COVID, it was not niche anymore. It was exact opposite, that every company wanted to be remote, or companies that previously had an office, they dropped the office during COVID and they never came back. And now we have like a lot of talks about like coming back to offices and so, but still there will be very many companies that will stay remote. What means for us is interesting market, because these remote companies, they need to meet in person at least once a year. Some of them, they are doing it like three times a year. But if you have an office, it's just it's a nice perk, right? Like to go for a company retreat. You already have office where people meet. If you want to create like some team building events, you can book a restaurant next to office, or to go to do some team building in the city. You don't need to fly somewhere and organize a company offsite. It's a luxury thing. But when you are remote, it's a necessity. So that's what changed.
Last minute cancellations suck, and that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any three-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest, and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form, and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like one of those like incredible right place, right time, right idea. And the fact that you guys had built a groundwork and really like you built the business before COVID. And so that by the time, right, COVID hit and then we came out of COVID, you guys were ready, right? There were so many, like there've been a lot of companies that had like started startups during COVID, during the pandemic, right? Or right at the tail end of it to try to sort of like meet this demand that you know, people saw emerging, but you guys had a head start on everybody because you were working at it before, which is amazing. I want to talk a little bit about some of your other projects that are a little bit more like, you know, focused on the traditional hospitality. You've got this really cool newsletter that I dabbled in briefly. I found it interesting, so I will have to actually subscribe. It's called Hotel Nuggets. And then you've also got this like really cool website called Buy That Hotel. And from my read on the site, it's basically a way to find small sort of like boutique hotels that are for sale that folks might want to buy. And one of the funny things that's happening that's especially relevant to our listeners is there's a lot of folks who've built really cool short-term rental portfolios. They've built really cool hospitality brands. And if you've figured out how to do that well, it seems to be that like the next step is to become a hotelier. Like that seems to be the desire of a lot of folks. It's like, okay, I've built my like Airbnb portfolio. Now it's time for, you know, the big boy, the big girl leagues. Like I want to buy a hotel. I want to build a hotel. Like that seems to be sort of like that next step. So I'm curious, talk to us a little bit about the newsletter. Where did the idea for it come from? What are some hot trending topics that you've covered recently? And then tell us the story behind Buy That Hotel.
Yeah, I might follow what you said about people working vacation rentals going into hotel industry. I've seen this a lot in the last year or two, and I believe it's coming from the fact that you just need more units to make the business work, right? Like when you have vacation rental, you typically with the hotel you have like, if you buy a hotel you have like 20 units, and when you have 20 units you can have a restaurant, you can do a lot of other things. While you have vacation rentals, you add another one, like some cabins, like it's very difficult to scale. So once you, it's a nice side gig or it's nice for bootstrapping, but once you realize that actually you are good in that and you know to do, like you have these skills in like the revenue management and like operations, then why not to do it on larger scale? Coming back to the projects, like the SurOffice as a business, it evolved into something like we can call it like a productized agency. So like an agency model where we automated a lot of things and make them much more efficient, so we could provide much better value for money to our clients. And I believe most clients, they see us still as an agency, but the business in the last year or two has evolved into more like a marketplace, where for us, like on one side are all these amazing companies organizing offsites, and on other side are these like amazing venues, hotels, villas, resorts that work with us, and we are trying to help them to make their space like better for hosting company offsites, and from there came like a lot of lot of knowledge, or like I got a lot of insights about the industry. I've always been passionate about auto industry, but somehow I now like I'm getting like a lot of insights. And we just thought like, okay, why not to share those insights or interesting stories you hear and there? Like, well, we are not sharing like secret stuff from the hotels, but you just hear it like, hey, have you heard about what are these guys doing? And your research online and like this interesting, like I call them nuggets. And that's why I call the newsletter Hotel Nuggets. Like we are finding these like golden nuggets in hospitality that are interesting and share them. Because when you when you're in like your podcast is amazing because you are interviewing these people doing not always like big brand, big business stuff, you know? And but when you go to Skift or these publications about hospitality, it's about this hotel in New York was sold for $300 million and Marriott launched a new brand and like doesn't matter to me, you know. It's not interesting, it's not valuable, I cannot use it for my business. So what are these little things that can help me with my business or inspire me with my business if I run a small hotel or large hotel or I run some vacation rentals? So that's from where came the idea for Hotel Nuggets. And we sent for every 2 weeks we send like four little nuggets.
Can you give us like a couple of like the recent ones that you sent? Like what are a couple of like the latest and greatest like golden nuggets that you've featured in the newsletter?
It was in the last newsletter we talked about the Wim Hof hotel. Wim Hof is that guy who people who are into like cold plunge and all that stuff, like know this Dutch guy who promoted it, like to that you can go to for hiking in -3 and you don't need to wear any clothes, and it became very popular. I noticed more in Europe, but it's also like quite popular in the US. And I was interviewing one of the people who work for them for some job, and he was telling me like, yeah, we have this hotel in Poland and we organized there like for last like 7-8 years the workshops, and they kind of like monopolized the hotel is using booking.com and they get some other clients as well, but most of their guests are coming from Wim Hof. And I called it like Wim Hof Hotel, and I started to research it. So I had this insight and I started to research it, and I found that hotel on booking.com doesn't have good reviews. And I was just fascinated like how you can create like super interesting business without like talking about it on social media, having strong brand. They just made like one strong partnership with the influencer, basically. That's like a partnership with the influencer and it covered like their maybe 70% of their occupancy. So they don't need to really like work hard and have a website or whatever. Then the rest they rent on booking.com and they are good. And I just thought like, well, this can be replicated to so many other things, right? So this is just one example.
Yeah, I love that example. And just to follow up on that, Peter, one of the things that I have seen a lot of folks in this space do successfully recently is kind of these influencer partnerships. I was talking to somebody who has this really beautiful like Italian villa in Tuscany, and you go to their website and it is god awful. Like it is so hard to navigate. Like it looks like something that you'd like never trust, you know, you'd never trust to put your credit card in kind of a place, right? And yet on social media, all their content is stunning. And I was like, surely I have like the wrong place. And I kept trying to figure out like, is this the same place? And I was like, no, it is the same place. Like the website is the same place. But what they had done is they had just invested so much in working with some travel influencers to basically create beautiful, stunning reels. And the property is beautiful and the property has incredible service, but they just used, you know, the limited capital they had for marketing purposes in very strategic ways. And they're also like, you can't book them through like booking.com or any online travel agency. Like you got to book direct, but it's really just the fact that they have built up such a really beautiful, you know, Instagram page, quite frankly, with these wonderful travel influencers, that they're 85% booked from Instagram. Like it's crazy, right? So it's just remarkable, like the whole idea that you just have to go get reviews and you've got to go and be on all these OTAs and you've got to, you know, hustle, hustle, hustle. You also have to have a direct booking site, right? Like, that's one approach. And quite frankly, it is the approach that most people probably have to take. But, right, it's cool to hear these stories like the one that you just shared, because it's a reminder that, like, hey, if you're really trying to do something unique and different, what if you forgot all the time and that it takes to, like, invest in something like that, and instead just go and find that one influencer that's going to be, like, key, or the couple of influencers that are going to be key to help, you know, drive demand for your unique property. That strategy could be just as, if not way more effective than you know, the former. So anyways, just wanted to add that.
100% agree.
So tell us about I Buy That Hotel. Where did the story for that come from?
Yeah, I used to, I'm still spending a lot of time on these listing websites in Spain or Portugal and looking for, like, interesting opportunities. Also, a lot of interesting opportunities just come to me and people ask me about my opinion. And I have, like, a network of people in hospitality on WhatsApp, and we are just sharing these deals. And I just found fascinating that there is no, like, website that is aggregating all these deals. And European market in general, It's fragmented, that each country in Europe has its own, like, Zillow type of website. And there is no really website, like, for, like, commercial real estate. In the US, you have LoopNet, where you can find some data. Like, they share more data, like, about the occupancy, not all the listings, but most of the listings, they share more data about what's the average daily rate and so. But there is nothing like that in most countries. And I just thought, like, this is an interesting opportunity, like, just to create. And these listings, these hotels are published on these websites. You just cannot find them. They don't have even a category like hotels. Like, you have to really do, like, it's under commercial properties section, and you have to, like, really dig into it and find them. And I just thought, like, yeah, I have some hacks already how to find these hotels. And I started to just put them into Google spreadsheet. And then I thought, like, maybe I can create a Webflow website where I nicely list them. And then I thought, like, what other data I could add. And I copied, like, all their reviews, for instance, to ChatGPT. And I was like, make me, like, a summary of, like, what are like the negative and positive things about this property. And I don't need to read, like, 500 reviews. It just tells me, like, in the summary, like, yeah, guests mentioned that there are some issues with the water, right? And like with the warm water. And then it's up to you when you're buying a hotel, like, to evaluate which issues are actually, there can be a very problematic in the future. Some of the issues are like, wow, this I can fix very quickly. Like, bad internet, well, you just install Starlink and there is amazing internet from the next day. So you can better evaluate the property. So the idea was like to add this type of, like, more insights when you are trying to buy something. And yeah, that's it. I launched it literally this week. So I have already some feedback, but it's a very fresh project.
Oh, really?
So I don't know how it's going to evolve.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, it looks great for only being, like, a week old. That's remarkable, man. I went to your website and I clicked through your kind of, like, personal brand website that talks about all your various projects. And I clicked through to this one and I just thought it was beautiful and like genius, right? Because again, for our listeners' sake, a lot of times, you know, people have these big dreams of going and, like, buying a bunch of land and then, like, building this landscape hotel. And, you know, I've got friends who are doing these things right now, and it's amazing, but it also takes an insane amount of capital, right? And it takes, you know, 2, 3, 4 years and then some to get it built, right? Versus, hey, it takes less capital, especially if you're going after a more, like, boutique offering. And if you really want to become a hotelier, and if you want to do that quickly, and if you want to learn, you know, take your learnings from building a vacation rental portfolio and then apply it to a hotel, why not just freaking buy one that that's already there, right? And then upgrade it with the tech it needs. You know, most of these properties, I would imagine, right, are quite behind the times when it comes to any sort of automation and any sort of effective use of technology. You just being kind of a smart person and a good operator and somebody that, you know, knows how to leverage ChatGPT, for instance, could do a lot of damage in a positive way, right, to some of these properties and turn it into more of a cash flowing business, probably a lot sooner than you would if you were building something from the ground up. So I think it's a remarkable idea, and I'll have to check in with you in several months from now to just see how it's going. Are you thinking from a monetization standpoint, do you have any plan for monetization right now? Are you trying to get some sort of like affiliate like cut or rev, or like what's your thought there?
Yeah, all these type of websites, they typically try to charge you some fee for posting a new listing. What I see with this in this segment, it doesn't look like interesting business. And also, like, you are selling on your website something what has value 2 or 5 million, then maybe there are more opportunities to capture the value. So I would say like the ultimate goal is to become a broker, at least for some markets. That's like a long-term thing. I'm not planning anything like that in the next month or year. In short term, the monetization is probably going to be around some info products, like for people who want to buy a product, to buy the hotel, to understand better, like how the market like in that region or area looks like what the rent you can charge, and maybe like understanding good like the zoning, like you buy a hotel in countryside, you have plenty of free land, can you put there like cabins and to add 10 more units with glamping. Like before you buy it, right? Like these are the things that you want to evaluate quickly before you buy. And if you want to buy something for like 2 million, you are probably going to invest into this type of things. Like for instance, in Portugal and Spain, it's very similar to California, that you have a lot of areas that are problematic with the water and with the fires. You know, like imagine you buy something and there will be no water in like 10 years. And like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And, or there is a very high risk of fires. And yeah, this data is not so much public, and it's like, you need to really dig into it. So I thought about like using the data and selling the data in some kind of package.
Yeah, no, I think that that's brilliant. And makes a lot of sense, especially for like a non-native buyer, right? So if you're, for instance, like in the States and you're interested in buying, you know, one of these boutique hotels in Lisbon, in Greater Portugal, and you just don't understand the market, I would absolutely pay, right, a couple hundred bucks, whatever it is, to access some more well-researched, good on the ground data that is just quite frankly going to be a lot harder for me to come by as like, you know, an American living in Washington, DC, for instance. So love that idea and love that sort of that potential monetization model, as opposed to trying to require somebody to pay to post and or trying to get some sort of like, you know, cut on the deal. That's obviously logistically like very difficult and something that takes a lot of time. So I like the idea of starting with like paid info products at the forefront to help fund the business.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Well, dude, this has been great. I'm just fascinated by you, Peter. Like, you're doing so many different things, and it's so cool to see how like, while at first glance they look a little fragmented, when you look a little closer, you realize, oh wow, these are all like very synergistically like connected, right? Like you've got Surf Office, this marketplace for these off-site company retreats and gatherings, which means like you've got to build partnerships and relationships with hotel people, right? One of the best ways to build partnerships and relationships with hotel people to host some of these offsites, right, is to have a newsletter that talks to things that they care about, so you can acquire new perspective, you know, leads and potential partners that way. And then you've got this like, you know, site where people can now buy boutique hotels. So it's just a very cool collection of projects that you've built, and I'm inspired by it, and I really hope that we can stay in touch, because I'd love to see where and how some of these things pan out.
Thank you. And yeah, it was a great conversation. I really enjoyed your questions and how you were digging deep into it. Very cool chat.
Well, Peter, if folks want to get in touch with you or just learn more about you or just follow you on your journey of entrepreneurship, like, what's the best way for them to do so? I'll have links to your LinkedIn and your Twitter below, as well as your website. Anywhere else you'd want folks to reach out if they're interested in connecting?
I would say the best place to reach out to me and to find out about my project is my personal website, which is my first name and surname, peterfaber.com. And there I have all the links to Twitter and LinkedIn and all these projects we were talking about.
Wonderful. Well, hey, man, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote-unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.